I have to confess that I would not be alive today if it were not for my grandmother's bigotry. Yes, my New England Unitarian grandmother's bigotry. You see, my father was in love with an Irish Catholic woman, and his mother would not allow him to marry her. So he ended up marrying my mother instead. Should I be thankful for my grandmother's prejudices, which, by the way, also included Italians and Jews, since those prejudices led to my being born? Or should I be sad that there was so much prejudice, even among the supposedly more liberal New England WASPs? What I've come to realize, partly as a result of thinking about my grandmother and others of her generation, is that I too, a well-educated New England liberal WASP, have negative stereotypes. I long ago began working to overcome any negative stereotypes about Irish, Italians, Jews, and persons of color, mainly by getting to know many of them as close friends, and also by being inspired by the writings of Martin Luther King Jr. and others. But I still have some very conscious stereotypes about evangelicals, rednecks, and Trump supporters. Having negative stereotypes of one kind or another, unfortunately, is very much part of being human. It's a largely unconscious way of deprecating those who we feel are not members of our immediate tribe and to feel superior to them. And stereotypes, unfortunately, create self-consciousness on all sides. We all too easily have a stereotype about certain persons that depicts them as having stereotypes about us, and also that depicts them as having stereotypes about us having stereotypes about them. It can go on and on and on. What does it feel like to be in the presence of those who you fear because of your ethnicity, gender preference, and or skin color might be judging you negatively? Might you not be extremely self-conscious? I'd like to share two experiences of being completely surrounded by people of a different skin color. Two experiences where I felt extremely self-conscious. In the fall of 1963, I was among a group of 7 or 8 white college students invited by Malcolm X to attend what was probably the last black Muslim gathering where Malcolm spoke prior to his split with Elijah Muhammad. Malcolm, after a number of years of decrying the sincerity and usefulness of white allies, had apparently decided his movement needed some, especially if, like him, they wanted to revolutionize our society. There were 7 or 8 of us at a theater in Philadelphia, and we were led by the ushers to the front row of the balcony, apparently on Malcolm's orders. The ushers looked at us strangely and did not smile. And when Elijah Muhammad came to the lectern, he looked up at us with a considerable scowl. But Malcolm, when he came to the lectern, looked up with a smile and said something like, "I have invited some young white people here today. They are allies, and like us, they want to revolutionize our country and create greater equality of all people." Suddenly, several hundred black faces were looking up at us, some of them disdainfully, but many with a curious expression, somewhere between acceptance and disbelief. We smiled and waved and hoped we looked more like revolutionaries than like descendants of any slave traders or slave owners. Some in the audience frowned, others smiled and waved back. That was the first experience. Here is the second. 5 years later, on a night in April 1968, while a student at Columbia University in New York City, I was driving a taxi cab down St. Nicholas Avenue in the heart of Harlem. A young black couple was in the back seat. Oddly, it seemed, they were ducking down. They must be making out, I thought. Suddenly, just after I came to a stop at a traffic light, I saw a building on the far corner go up in flames. There were crowds of people everywhere, shouting and running in every direction. One impeccably dressed black man was trying to hail a cab and kept looking at me, wondering why my rooftop light was out, but no one was visible in the back seat. Suddenly, I heard a voice say, "Is that a white?" My heart stopped, but I sat there perfectly still, pretending I hadn't heard anything, my arm still resting on the sill of the open cab window. Finally, about 10 seconds later, the traffic light changed from red to green, and I drove on ahead. The well-dressed black man, still gazing into my back seat to see why my rooftop light was out. When I dropped off my ducking down passengers 10 minutes later, they informed me that Martin Luther King had been killed that day. In these two experiences, each of them lasting only a few minutes, I think I got a teeny tiny sampling of what it feels like to have a different ethnicity or skin color than those around me and to become self-conscious that people might be judging me negatively. And if I were of some ethnicity or skin color other than the dominant one in my culture, how many hundreds of thousands of times more often might I have had such feelings? Sometimes when I remember my experiences at that Black Muslim rally or on the streets of Harlem, I try to imagine myself being the only white person to join a Black or Latino church. Even if there were no theological barriers, how might it feel? Even after I made a few close friends, would I not have a lingering concern that they and or others might have more than a few conscious or unconscious stereotypes about me? Might I wish there were other white, Asian, Native American, or mixed race people there so I would feel less conspicuous? When I visit cities in California, I have the most wonderful feeling of being surrounded by such a mixture of skin color that neither I nor anybody around me stands out. Whites, Blacks, Asians, Latinos, Native Americans, all sorts of mixed race people are everywhere. They're all much closer to a sense of common humanity there. And in Longmont, Colorado, I sometimes experience at least a tiny sampling of that. But in all the rest of Boulder County, I rarely, if ever, experience that feeling. How do we get from here to there? Is it about endless soul searching, about attending one workshop after another, about overcoming our unconscious racism and sense of privilege? Or should we just sit back and wait until continental drift causes a portion of California to end up in Colorado? My answer is that we need to look at our imperfect selves and start finding ways to approach anti-racism with more love and less egotism and guilt. We all need to get past the notion instilled in us by our culture that we have to be, or at least appear to be, perfect in every way, and that befriending people with different backgrounds represents an extra A on our social justice report card. We need instead to make it clear that we are just as human as anyone and that our interest in forming greater connections comes from our hearts, not just from our very strong desire to right society's wrongs. When it becomes clear to all that our connections are from the heart, more than simply from that deep desire to right the world's wrongs, then maybe, just maybe, everybody's self-consciousness will begin to dim way down. And we can begin to realize that we're all part of one beautiful human race. In closing, I'd like to share a wonderful California experience. Namely, my half-WASP, half-Jewish son Daniel's marriage to a Chinese-American woman named Jen last July. It was presided over by Jennifer Kwong, a UU minister with a totally delightful sense of humor, who was born in the Philippines of Chinese descent. And it was descended by people of all ages whose ancestors came from every continent on this planet, every race, every age, and a great many cultures. I get chills when I remember the dancing that happened at the end of the ceremony. Everyone from a half Chinese, half German, 4-year-old boy to a very lively 94-year-old Jewish lady, all joyfully dancing together without a single person looking the tiniest bit self-conscious. Let us work together to find ways other than continental drift to bring more of that unself-consciousness to Colorado. Amen.